The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's show. We'll finally, if you've been anxiously waiting for this, we've had a little bit of a layoff from it after covering it so much. But we'll look into, once again, the Mueller investigation, the ongoing saga, and just how desperate that team of left-wing prosecutors, how desperate they are to bring down the Trump administration. And we'll tie it in with, again, the cover that the media continually provide for these prosecutors, for this special counsel. And then we'll tie it in later on in the show. Hopefully we'll have enough time for the full message, but we've put together some material as well on Satan's great deception. We're producing that into a television program, so I'll reserve some of that for the last part of today's radio show. But first, I want to begin with Britain Leaves Europe, or an article, rather, that we wrote back in January of 2008. So this is almost 11 years old. It's titled, When Britain Leaves Europe. That's how we put it. When it happens. And keep in mind, this was back in 2008. This was 11 years ago. That was the title, and we said soon, this is Brad McDonald writing, soon Britain will not be a member of the European Union. This was long before the Brexit referendum was held, or even called for. It was before the Conservative government was in power. At the time that this article was written, there was no clear way to see how Britain could leave the Union. Not back at the end of 2007 or the early part of 2008 when this article first appeared in the Trumpet magazine. And yet we said sooner or later, something is bound to crack in this uncomfortable relationship between a federalist, undemocratic European Union and the very nation that created the system of parliamentary democracy. Further on, it says, either when a British government becomes completely frustrated in balancing British public opinion against further loss of national sovereignty with ongoing EU demands, or when its uneasy European bedfellows get tired of its nagging, Britain will either leave or be thrown out of this unwieldy mixture of iron and clay. This rising United States of Europe, some references there, of course, to some prophecies, startling prophecies. They should be, Daniel 2, Revelation 17. And look at what we've seen happen since that article was written. Brad McDonald continued saying, the withdrawal of Britain from the European Union will be a watershed event in the annals of Western civilization. A watershed event. He said that Britain joining the EU will be a real watershed in European politics. And then notice this, without Britain's foot dragging, holding it back, the Italian, French, German threesome will be free to pursue their imperialist agenda. So Britain's on the way out, and once they're out, then you can look for the heart of Europe, led by Germany, of course, to really accelerate that imperialist agenda. Now, how do we know? How do we know they were leaving? And how do we now know where this is headed? This acceleration's happening. It's happened in the last few weeks, as we know. Well, it goes back to that prophecy. Herbert Armstrong said it in 1973, Britain will regret the day that it joins this European Union. And of course, he said even before that Britain would not be part of it, ultimately. Not as it was fulfilling these prophecies of actually coming against our nations, the beast power, I mean. It's prophesied to attack Britain and to attack the United States. And so Mr. Armstrong said in 1973, they're going to regret the day that they joined this, and it's not going to work out. It's going to lead to a messy divorce, and we're seeing that. The article from 2008 said, on that day, a substantial thorn was inserted into the flesh of the European community. From the moment it slouched into the EC, Britain has been a burden to the unification process. One never too heavy to tank unification, yet cumbersome enough to guarantee integration remained a sputtering, controversial process. So they couldn't quite move along. It didn't quite destroy it. It didn't quite destroy the Union. But they just couldn't move forward. Not fast enough. Not with Britain as a member. Well, now that's changed. Now Britain is on the way out. And this article, it's actually quoting a Financial Times piece from a few months earlier, back in October of 2007. This commentator that said that as long as Britain's in, I mean, there's just only so much we can do with respect to European integration, because Britain's going to drag its feet on things like a European army. It says here further on in the article, let me see if I can find it. Given this reality, Britain was bound, once having been accepted as the EC member, to become a thorn in its flesh, given that it had always seen its role as being the offshore masterful balancer of European power. That's the way that Britain has traditionally seen its role, and it goes back hundreds of years. It goes back centuries. We have a clip here from Winston Churchill, something he said back in 1936, where he talked about just how long-standing this English foreign policy has been to oppose the strongest power on the continent. This is Churchill in 1936, clip 7.
For 400 years, the foreign policy of England has been to oppose the strongest, most aggressive, most dominating power on the continent.
That's Winston Churchill from 1936. It goes back 400 years, he said. Our foreign policy is to oppose the strongest, most aggressive, most dominant power in Europe. And so when Britain joined the EU, or the EC, back in 1973, every step along the way, when there was talk to build a European army, it resisted against it. It said, no, we're attached to NATO. And whenever there were unification treaties, more integration, Britain was always kicking against it. In that 2008 article at the Trumpet, we said, freed of the British thorn in the flesh, European unification will blossom. Think about that forecast for a moment. Because as I say, this goes back 11 years. We said, they're going out, and once they're out, then Europe will really move forward. We said, Britain will forfeit much of its ability to intervene in European affairs and to counter that axis. To counter that German, French, Italian axis, that ambition that they have. And then Mr. McDonald wrote that this will also directly impact the United States, which since the First World War has used Britain as a proxy in its own foreign policy in relation to Europe. It could certainly sound the death knell for the bastion of the European security, rather, NATO. That's again another astounding forecast. That once Britain leaves, and when you put this together with the election of Donald Trump, in the same year, think about the significance of 2016, Brexit in June, Donald Trump's elected in November, and then right away he starts talking about all these European nations that need to pay their fair share. And if you don't, we're going to withdraw our security blanket. All of it's happening. Britain's on the way out. And we wrote in the Trumpet in 2008 that when Britain leaves, it could certainly sound the death knell for the bastion of European security, NATO. We're seeing it happen. Macron calling for an army, saying that America is an enemy. Angela Merkel, for her part, saying we can't rely on the U.S. And so we need our own army. That sound you're hearing, it's the death knell for NATO as Europe's security defense. Freed of the British thorn in the flesh, we wrote, European unification will blossom. Well, what's happening right now, it's blossoming. That's what we're seeing. This story in Handelsblatt just from a couple days ago. How about this for a headline? Thanks to Brexit, the European army is on its way. That's what the trumpet was saying in 2008. What you're seeing in headlines today, what you're seeing headlining newspapers today, is what we wrote in the trumpet decades ago, more than a decade ago. Herbert Armstrong, if you bring the plain truth into it, it was decades. A half century, more than that. Handelsblatt says last week, German and French defense ministries quietly announced contracts for further cooperation. Could Brexit and the impending departure of the EU's biggest military spender finally be causing the Germans to pick up their guns? Could Brexit finally be causing the Germans to turn militaristic? Now, Britain's not even officially out yet, and yet look at how fast it's moving. Look at what Germany and France are doing. The trumpet piece from 2008 said Brexit may be sad, but it has had one positive outcome for the other 27 nations. Actually, this is the Handelsblatt piece, sorry. Brexit, it's referring to Brexit. This is the recent story in Germany, this German publication from 2 days ago. It says Brexit may be sad, but it has had one positive outcome for the 27 nations in the European Union. It has brought them closer together politically. So there's more political integration as well, now that Britain's on the way out. There's more political integration, and then you have all of this movement forward on the European army. And it's got the full and hearty endorsement of the German chancellor and the French president. It says there may soon be another sector that can celebrate more togetherness thanks to the British decision to leave the EU. The defense industry. Remember what I didn't bring all the clips with me like per usual. All of those statements by Herbert Armstrong from so many years ago. Economic unity, political unity, and military unity. We're seeing it all come together. These are sobering, sobering realities. Ominous potentialities, Mr. Armstrong said about Britain. But in the bigger picture, you could say the same thing for the entire world. Look at where these prophecies are headed. We know where they're headed. Look at how fast, though, they're moving. It says here, despite close cooperation with France, the EU's other big military spender, the UK has always been closer to NATO than the idea of a European army. So when they were in, and I know we've made this point before, but it's worth bringing it out here because the trumpet, as our tag often says, it's tomorrow's news today. Tomorrow's headlines right now. I mean, you can get it now at the trumpet. We've made the point before, when Britain was in, they resisted against any talk or movement headed in the direction of a European army. Handelsblatt says, additionally, Britain was always a fly in the sticky ointment of European defense. Successive British governments have been careful to ensure that the EU did not develop any serious national security or defense capabilities that might impinge on the UK's own. That's quoting from a former British spy chief. When they were in, you see, they resisted against that. But that could all be about to change. Up until recently, Germany has been reluctant to truly engage in building up a European army. But lately, there's been lots of talk about not being able to rely on the Americans anymore. So they're right together in this. The Americans and the British on the way out. And the Germans and the French talking about building a united military force. We can't rely on America anymore. We can't rely on Britain anymore. You see these two opponents emerging. They were intertwined for some time, and the peace was held, for the most part, following World War II, as long as you had America imposing its will on the continent, and Britain was there as its proxy, just like Mr. McDonald wrote in 2008. But now you've got President Trump, you've got the Jeroboam end, you've got the Jeroboam administration, and then you've got Brexit. You've got the prophesied departure of the UK from the European Union. These are electrifying developments. They should be. What about all of God's people, the Laodiceans, that have just gone to sleep? This is the keynote prophecy, as we've said so many times before. And all of this is now happening at a time when so many of God's people are fast asleep. The European Union nations are coming together like never before. There's still some restructuring. We know this. We know it's going to be reorganized to some extent. But look at the pace. Keep your eyes on the pace. Just last week, Germany and France announced these plans to, for German and Dutch and French companies to work together on armaments. Handelsblatt says the announcement may have been mild-mannered when they came out and announced this, but in fact it can be seen as an important de facto declaration of intent via the biggest defense contracts in the EU. The resulting contracts could see the involved companies turn over in the hundreds of billions by 2040. Well, we're going to see it happen much more fast than that, as we know. We had another article at the Trumpet just this week, Europe's Next Generation Combat System. So the Trumpet, if you want tomorrow's news today, go to thetrumpet.com, subscribe to the Trumpet magazine. It's all happening at a lightning pace. Just this week, Britain's defense secretary, he made it clear that the UK is not going to be part of a European army. Notice, again, the dramatic changes. This is the UK now, which is on the way out saying, well, the European army is forming, but we're not going to be a part of it. It used to be that Britain said we shouldn't have a European army. It used to be that America said there's no way we're going to let Germany rearm. There's no way that that's going to happen. Notice the dramatic changes. Now it's just accepted. It's inevitable. They need an army. President Trump has encouraged it in so many ways. And here you have the UK defense chief now, who's saying, well, okay, they're building this army, we're not going to be a part of it. But never does he say, look, we're against it, even though we're on the way out. We are against the formation of an EU army. He didn't even say that, at least not in the article. No one's talking about stopping it. Do you think Winston Churchill and FDR would have talked about stopping this kind of a development? Had it happened a few years after World War II? Well, FDR died soon there right at the end of the war, but you get what I mean. What would they have said just a few years after if Germany and France and Italy moved forward on this kind of development? It says here, this is quoting from the Trumpet now, it says, by now, surely we can grasp the sheer magnitude of a future British withdrawal from the EU. Yet there's an even more spectacular, more fascinating, more personal angle to this event. And that's the way Mr. McDonald set up his conclusion from that 2009 or 2008 article. He said, look, if, just to paraphrase, he said, look, if Herbert Armstrong was spot on with his forecast in 1956 and 1973, if he came out and dogmatically said that many years ago that Britain would be no part of it, then what should you do? If the forecast was that accurate 50 years ago, what should you be asking yourself right about now? Well, how could he have figured this out? Where did he get this information? He got it from the sure word of Bible prophecy. He got it from the same God that, as it says in Isaiah 46, the same God who declares the end from the beginning. We're seeing these prophecies being fulfilled. It should serve as a jolt. It should motivate you. It should get you excited about tearing into the trumpet, for one, immersing yourself into this content that we make available at no cost or obligation. But we're certainly sending it out hopeful that it will change your life, that it will impact your day-by-day living, and that you'll make the changes that you need to make to come along and to support God's work more directly. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Quite a lot of revelations this week regarding the Bob Mueller investigation into the so-called Trump collusion with Russia during the 2016 election. To this point, as you well know, they have found nothing, no evidence whatsoever of any kind of collusion between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin or whoever else in Moscow. Nothing. What they do have are some advisors or former advisors to the president that made mistakes or maybe had a misstatement during a testimony. Or in the case of Paul Manafort, financial crimes from 10, 12, 15 years ago. And then the Mueller team, again, left-wing prosecutors, and one of them with the shadiest of backgrounds. But it goes forward. They're untouchable. You can't fire Mueller. You can't put an end to this investigation. If the president ever did that, he would be out the door. You talk about, obstruction of justice. An impeachment trial right away. Bob Mueller's above reproach. Bob Mueller can do no wrong. Bob Mueller is untouchable. Bob Mueller, so says the Senate, or at least a few of the senators, he needs to be protected. He needs to be legally protected. They need to pass some kind of legislation that prevents the president from firing someone in the executive branch of the government. You have Bob Mueller, who's working for the White House, and he is untouchable. The White House cannot touch him. And so as you have the budget and all the arguing that we're going to see over that. In the next few weeks, you've got senators like Jeff Flake who are saying, look, as part of the budget, we've got to include some kind of legislation that prevents Donald Trump from ever firing Bob Mueller. Even the thought of firing him. We have got to try to protect him from a scenario that could happen weeks from now or months from now. A scenario, by the way, that the president says, well, I'm not going to do it. Let it play out. He's been quite critical of it, of course. But they're concerned. You can't go after that side, the side that's going after Donald Trump. And if you notice, there's only a few voices, only a few that are standing up to this tyranny, to this hoax, to this lawlessness, to this radical left. Very few. There's a few in talk radio. Mike Lee yesterday, he gets up and says that, look, any bill protecting Robert Mueller, of all things, that's not constitutional. What about the Constitution? This is what Mike Lee said, I believe, yesterday, clip 6.
The prosecutorial authority of the United States belongs in the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice answers to the President of the United States. Its principal officers consist of people appointed by the President, serving at the pleasure of the President after being confirmed by the United States Senate. This is a fundamental component of our liberty. The separation of powers protects us. That doesn't mean we're going to agree with what every president in every administration always does. But as Justice Scalia explains, we cannot convert an office like this one, an office like the previously existing Office of Independent Counsel, without creating a de facto fourth branch of government, fundamentally undermining the principle of separation of powers that is so core to our liberty.
That's Senator Mike Lee yesterday, saying that any kind of bill protecting Robert Mueller, in fact, will create a fourth branch of government, a fourth branch that you see nothing about in the U.S. Constitution. So here is Mueller's team of left-wing prosecutors above the law, just like my father said in that May article, saving America from the radical left, temporarily. But as he said there, the further they get into this, the less evidence there is of any kind of collusion. But the more that this drags on, the more we're seeing this corruption on such a deep level. All of this lawlessness that's been exposed. This week, as I say, we're getting some pretty good insights into how the Mueller team operates. They're going after anyone closely associated with the president or loosely, or maybe in the case of Papadopoulos, someone that the president, I don't think, didn't even know. Anyone that they can get, they get him in. They get him in to testify under oath. And then if they catch them, if they make one false statement, they've got him. And then it's a matter of the plea deal, the bargain, flipping the witness, which is what they've been doing with Manafort. Look, you're guilty of this, this, and this. And they're all crimes, as President Trump pointed out earlier in a tweet. They're all crimes that never would have been prosecuted were it not for the hoax that is the Russian collusion story, that narrative created by the radical left. So here are all these financial crimes committed by Paul Manafort. And then the Mueller team, they're saying, look, we'll give you a reduced sentence if you come out and implicate the president in any kind of nefarious activity, Russian collusion, whatever. Andy McCarthy, he said at the, I think, National Review, this is from a few days ago, for their part, Manafort and his lawyers are clearly preparing to argue that Manafort was honest with, you'll recall the fallout from Monday. The Mueller team saying, look, this deal isn't working out because Manafort's a liar. And then Manafort came out and said, the reason I didn't agree to it was because they wanted me to lie so that they could get to Donald Trump. And McCarthy says here, for their part, Manafort and his lawyers are clearly preparing to argue that Manafort was honest, but that Mueller's rabidly anti-Trump prosecutors did not like what he had to say, i.e., he would not implicate the president in misconduct. This would echo a theme posited by Judge T.S. Ellis in Manafort's Virginia trial. Mueller aggressively pursued Manafort on charges that had nothing to do with Russia's interference in the 2016 election in order to squeeze Manafort into singing. This is what Judge Ellis saw. He saw right through it. And you would think more people would see through it. What's happening here? This is unconstitutional through and through. It's lawlessness through and through. They're trying to get the witness to sing, or as Ellis said, to compose this testimony. So the fallout is there between Mueller and Manafort. And then you have these other two this week. Roger Stone, who was just for a short time associated with the Trump campaign. And then Jerome Corsi. I don't even know how he factors into it. But they're trying to make all of these connections between Corsi and Stone. And then now Julian Assange. He's the WikiLeaks guy. He's the one that revealed the Hillary emails. And if you try to follow it, and I admit I don't follow it in the closest detail, but if you try to follow it, you see over and again that there's nothing here, nothing about Trump-Russian collusion or Trump-Putin collusion. Nothing. Corsi, for his part, he came out. They're trying to get him to flip as well. They're trying to get him to lie. Imagine that. A special counsel trying to get witnesses to lie, and then when it falls through and they can't get him to do it, the counsel comes out and says, that witness is lying. That's what's happening. That's what's going on. Of course, he said this week, I'm not going to sign a plea agreement that's a lie. I'm not going to give false information to the FBI or the special counsel just so that they could try to take down Donald Trump with it. Here's what Corsi said last night on Fox News, clip 4.
What the special prosecutor is asking me to do is accept a fraudulent plea, which I am going to have my attorneys file criminal charges on with the Department of Justice. My experience made it clear to me that the political criminals are running the Department of Justice and Mueller's prosecution. I was ridiculed. My testimony was laughed at. They yawned at it. They misbehaved. And they accused me of being a liar and a fabricator.
They said all of that. The prosecutors did about Jerome Corsi. And then want him to make this or to accept this fraudulent plea. What kind of plea? What did the prosecutors want to hear? Here's what he went on to say, clip 5.
Well, they wanted to hear that I had a source connected to Assange, or I did some way had a direct contact with Assange, so they could do the connection, which would go Roger Stone, Jerry Corsi, Assange, and then they'd have their basis for collusion. It was complete nonsense, but they would not accept when I told them that, in fact, I never met Assange. I had no contact with Assange.
It's just all complete nonsense, just made up by these special prosecutors. And, of course, with their leakers, they've given some of the info to the media. You have The Guardian here in the UK coming out with the big story. Here's another big headline. There's a connection here between Corsi and Stone and Assange in the Ecuador embassy here in London. That's right. You heard it here first. Molly Hemingway had an excellent piece at The Federalist today or yesterday talking about this conspiracy story and just how quickly the media hopped onto the bandwagon and says, well, if The Guardian printed it, it must be true. This proves collusion. This proves it. She says here, former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort, this is what The Guardian revealed earlier this week, that former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort secretly met with WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange in 2013, 2015, and ominously in the spring of 2016, just as the Trump campaign was heating up. So here is Assange, as I say. He's holed up in this London embassy, the Ecuadorian embassy. He's the one that, or his group, WikiLeaks, they published or hacked those emails, those Hillary emails from 2016. The emails from the, I guess, the DNC, to be more precise. And so they make all of those emails known, and this is the Mueller team trying to go after anyone associated with Donald Trump to see if they have a connection to WikiLeaks. Not Russia, not Putin, not Moscow, to WikiLeaks, to some guy that's in an Ecuadorian embassy in London. It says, Molly Hemingway says, even on first read, the story seemed difficult to believe. It was based on anonymous sources, so nondescript that they could be any of literally millions of people. A document from Ecuador's Senane Intelligence Agency allegedly claimed a Manafort had visited Assange along with Russians. A Manafort, but not Manafort. A little bit of a difference there. The story mentioned the discredited dossier that journalists wrote about and intelligence agencies used to secure wiretaps on Trump associates despite the failure to verify its claims. It says, since the visitor logs for the Ecuador embassy are public and show no mention of Manafort, the story had to come up with a convenient excuse for why he was missing from the logs. They went with the sources in Ecuador, however, to say that Manafort was not logged. So he somehow got around the logs. And how do they know? Well, according to sources in Ecuador, which, as she says, could literally be millions of people. Are you following along here? This is breaking news brought to you by The Guardian earlier this week. Hemingway says, I suppose it's possible that this outlandish story has merit, that a close ally of Trump was working with WikiLeaks in an election year, and it never managed to come out or get leaked, wasn't caught on visitor logs or by any of the UK's overeager spies who were all over everyone else who knew Trump. The UK and its spy agencies, they're right in the midst of this. They don't want President Trump to reveal all of that information regarding the FISA applications and such. They're pleading with the Trump administration, look, you can't release that. Don't make that public. That's going to hurt our spying techniques. They don't want it revealed because they were involved. The spy agency over here, just like the FBI in the United States, just like the CIA. It's called the deep state. And it's lawless through and through, or at least at the very top. It says here, it's possible that Manafort missed any of the gazillion cameras trained on visitors of the Ecuadorian embassy and was able to evade any intelligence gathering about the meeting. It's possible, but to believe it or to take it seriously, you'd have to have much better sourcing, particularly since fusion allied groups have a reputation of planting such stories with friendly journalists. And that's what happened here, yet again. Yet again, just like Roger Cohen going to Prague, creating this connection that never ever happened, trying to connect dots that aren't there. And so here they go again. What's really amazing about Hemingway's piece is she goes through just how ridiculous this story is, and then also points out how fast the major media, all the journalists, yes, the ones representing the big news networks, MSNBC, CNBC, NBC, ABC, the New York Times, and on it goes. All of the so-called intelligence and national security reporters, the senior political correspondents. And they're all tweeting out, well, if this doesn't show collusion, I don't know what does. This is a game changer. This is a bombshell. How could the Trump administration deny it? Assange. He strenuously denied this. WikiLeaks is preparing a lawsuit against The Guardian. Manafort says there's no truth to it whatsoever. You heard what Corsi said as they tried to reel him into this network that's not even there. Well, since these objections, and just a lot of commentators on the right that have said, look, how could, there's cameras everywhere in London. 3 visits? And nobody noticed the one in 2000. The FBI was following these people in 2016. They were spying on the Trump campaign. And nobody noticed Manafort or whoever coming out of the Ecuadorian embassy. People are pointing these kinds of things out. And so what do you suppose The Guardian does? Well, the Guardian goes back to the original article and starts changing things. They start softening it. The headline was softened, as Hemingway brings out in her piece. Then the paragraphs about how these meetings took place and how nefarious they were, they are hedged now, including words that say, well, if it did happen, it could mean this. That's how The Guardian, this is a newspaper of record, I suppose. Here's The Guardian covering its tracks. And I suppose this story, 6-7 months from now, just like the story with Roger Cohen in Prague, it'll fall by the wayside. But look at the reaction, the hyperventilating in the media. As they say, now we've got him. We've finally got him. Gotcha. This is the gotcha story. This is the bombshell we've been waiting for. This is the game changer. And like Andy McCarthy pointed out on Fox earlier this week, even if all of this was true, which it's not, where is the illegal activity? Seriously. This is what McCarthy said on Fox News, clip 1.
What I get from all of this, and I'm coming at this as somebody who has known and respected Bob Mueller and a number of the people on his staff who are very able lawyers, so I want to give this thing the benefit of the doubt. They were asked to look at, you know, get to the bottom of what Russia did to interfere with the election, which is a worthy cause. But that's camouflage, it seems to me, for what has become a clown show.
It's just a big clown show, says Andy McCarthy. He's a lawyer. He's a prosecutor, a former prosecutor. And says, look, I want to give these guys the benefit of the doubt, but this is ridiculous. This is just a hoax. He went on to say, regarding Jerome Corsi, the one you heard earlier in one of the clips, this is clip 2.
Let's assume, just for the moment, on the last thing that Catherine Herridge was talking about, that they got their big wish, right? Jerry Corsi has a contact in WikiLeaks, and he gets information from them. He gives it to Roger Stone, who gives it to President Trump. Let's assume all that happened, even though we don't have facts that establish that. It's not a crime.
It's not even a crime. It's not a crime. It, just like it's not a crime for a president to fire a prosecuting attorney, a special counsel, that's not even mentioned in the Constitution, but that is obviously an extension of the executive branch. It's not a crime, but if he does it, if he even thinks about doing it, if he even hints at doing it on Twitter, then he's guilty. Guilty as charged. If he hints at helping some of these people out that are being prosecuted unfairly, giving them a pardon or whatever, that's a crime. What about the crimes in the deep state? What about the unlawful spying? What about trying to induce someone to lie, to commit perjury, so that you can get them to flip on the real target, who is Donald Trump? None of that matters. The ends justify the means. They can do whatever they want. They're untouchable. Don't you go after Robert Mueller. His reputation's impeccable. His character, that's without any kind of stain. Nothing to look at there. And none of his prosecutors either. Wiseman? Forget about his history.
Forget about what judges have said about him in the past. He gets to go after Donald Trump. Everyone in the media, they can join in on the bandwagon. Everyone in Congress, for the most part. Maybe they're not all going along with this nonsense, but there's not enough of them that are standing up to it. It's sad seeing this happen to the United States of America and people on both sides, saving just a few. I guess they're happy to just go along with it. Hemingway says the authors expected people to believe that Manafort and Assange, two highly surveilled people, had not one, not two, but three meetings, never noticed by intelligence agencies. Most crazy of all was the notion that this explosive piece of collusion evidence was real, but never leaked until now? It happened in 2016, but it's only now being leaked? And no one picked up on any of these three visits on congressional committees or among the media? I mean, does it seem like it's hard to believe? It is hard to believe because it didn't happen. They're making it up as they go. It's all part of the hoax. My father said it, saving America from the radical left, the whole investigation. It's based on a hoax. He said Robert Mueller's team has been searching for evidence of collusion for nearly a year. You could add to that now a year and a half, and they've found nothing. What have we found? We've found a tremendous amount of lawbreaking on the other side. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll conclude with a relatively short Bible study. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
When you look at some of the things happening in the world today, when you think of what a lot of people think or assume, that the world's just getting better and better. I suppose they're deceived by the advancement of technology. But just education in general, well, more people are being educated. I recall that article from Joel Hilliker talking about some of the things where you have seen some improvements, modest though they might be, in recent decades, with eliminating hunger in certain parts of the world, I suppose. But in stepping back, you look at the evils like Herbert Armstrong used to play on his programs, those montages showing all of the suffering and the heartache in so many third world nations. And then even though there's prosperity in the first world nations and the Western nations, you have so much misery and unhappiness, division, moral breakdown, family breakdown. And looking at it all,
How could you conclude that this world is getting better, or that this world is a good place? It's not what God says in the Bible. The Apostle Paul in Galatians 1 refers to this world, your world, the world we're living in. He refers to it as the present evil world. The present evil world. That's God's assessment. So how is it that many, even in the traditional Christian world, they've been taught that this world's getting better and better? Your Bible says it's getting worse and worse. Read that in 2 Timothy 3:13. That whole chapter is for the last days. Paul says that in verse 1. Why is this world the way that it is? And why is it getting worse? And why does God say it's evil? There is one reason, and it's spelled out in multiple verses, in multiple Bible passages. 2 Corinthians 4, verses 3 and 4 is one of them. It says, "But if our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are lost, in whom the God of this world, the world that Paul said is evil, the God of this world has blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is in the image of God, should shine unto them." This world is the way that it is because of the God of this world. Satan is the God of this world. He's the prince of this world, as it says in the Gospel of John. He's the one who's blinded the minds of men to the truth of the gospel. It says in Revelation 12, verses 7 and 8, that there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels and prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven, no more place for them in heaven, in the universe. And so now they're confined to this earth. And what does it say in the next verse, verse 9? And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels, or his demons, were cast out with him. Satan's been cast down to this earth, and his demons are right here with him, and they no longer roam the universe, which, well, you see in verse 12, there's rejoicing in the heavens because of that. But we shouldn't be rejoicing on earth. I mean, we're filled with God's Spirit, and because of that, we rejoice. Those of us that understand God's truth. But these are sobering times, as I covered with you in the first two segments. You look at what's happening in this world. How do you explain all of this lawlessness, this obsession of so many, this derangement syndrome? You look at what's happening, and you have to know that there is a real spirit world, and that world is more real than the physical. That's the truth of the Bible. Don't discount it. Don't brush it aside. Don't dismiss it. How could Mr. Armstrong get all these prophecies spot on? And then more recently, you look at what my father's been saying about the attack on America, the Jeroboam end. We're right here at the last days. Satan is the God of this world. He's deceived this whole world. He's the prince of the power of the air. He surcharges the air, as Herbert Armstrong said in Mystery of the Ages, with his attitude of self-centeredness, vanity, hatred, strife, division. And that deception, it goes beyond government and commerce and industry and education and all that. He's deceived the religious world too. That's the truth. Read what Paul said in 2 Corinthians 11. Read about that great false religious system that calls itself Christian. Satan has his apostles, his ministers, his deceitful workers. They transform themselves into the apostles of Christ. They transform themselves. They pretend to be religious. Just like Paul said in 2 Timothy 3, there's a form of godliness. But there's, well, that's all that it is. It may look like it's religious, but it's not. It's not at all. God is about to, like I cover, I guess I didn't cover it on radio. I brought it out in class the other day. We went through Isaiah 25. But just to tie in what we just read there about the whole world being in darkness. Read in Isaiah 25. We don't have time to go through it all. But read in Isaiah 25 where it talks about that veil finally being lifted during the wonderful world of tomorrow. Read about that time in Revelation 20, the first three or four verses that talk about Satan being bound for 1,000 years, and then finally, the whole world, the nations of this world, won't be deceived any longer. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to give us some feedback, we always enjoy that. You can email us at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.